We're going to talk, as I said, about how New York State is particularly important because we have proposed multiple proposed plans on the table to how to get to, you know, a greener future by far. But of course, politics is getting in the way. So let's talk about how we can push these politicians to take meaningful action. And who are we speaking with? Mark Dunley. Mark is the co-founder of the Green Party of New York. He spent 30 years working for Hunger at the Hunger Action Network of New York, is the chair of the Green Education and Legal Fund. He's the author of Madam President, the unauthorized biography of the first Green Party president, and co-author of Asleep at the Wheel, a study of the performance of local departments of social service. Mark, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Well, Juliana, thank you very much for having us. Always great to be on WBAI and hope people contribute to keep WBAI an independent voice.
Thank you very much. We are coming up on our pledge drive in another month, and so you'll be hearing that ask quite a bit starting in May. So, Mark, we're happy to have you on the show because lawmakers are talking about different proposals on the table here in New York for combating climate change. Can you talk about what those are that are on the table, the OFF Act, the CCPA, and the major differences between them?
Well, the legislature, particularly the Assembly, has been pushing the Climate and Community Protection Act, which in various versions has been around since 2009. The strong point of the CCPA is it has a very strong commitment that any climate action we take needs a very strong environmental justice component and a just transition so that workers presently engaged in the fossil fuel industry are not left behind. And communities that have become dependent upon local fossil fuel plants for, you know, say, local property taxes and schools are paid during that transition. But it's relatively slow in its call for how we move to 100% clean energy. It does not actually address any type of halt to the fossil fuels. It basically sets the old standard that existed before the Paris Climate Agreement of trying to move to 100% clean energy by 2050. That's the weak point. The governor actually has come out with proposals that are somewhat stronger now, at least on the transition to renewable energy. He's calling for 70% renewable energy for electricity, which is actually the smallest part of our carbon footprint among the big sectors, by 2030, and what he calls carbon-free by 2040. What the OFF Act does, the OFF Fossil Fuel Act does at the state level, it basically took a report that people had asked to be put together by a bunch of professors at Stanford and Cornell during the fight over fracking to show that we did not need more natural gas in New York State. And what that did was it showed how it was technologically feasible for New York State to move to 100% clean, renewable energy for everything, for electricity, for buildings, for transportation by 2030. It seeks to put that plan into law and also add on the environmental justice and trust transition provisions.
So there was a study, and it says we can definitely do it without a huge disruption. Why haven't we seen the results of this study? Why isn't it everywhere?
It's because of the power that the fossil fuel industry continues to have, the campaign contribution that it makes. And New York, unfortunately, like a lot of states, tends to be much better as announcing goals for climate change as opposed to actually accomplishing them. Governor Pataki in 2002 said, at that point, relatively ambitious targets for climate change. And the reality is, 15 years later, 16 years later, through Governor Pataki, Patterson, Spitzer, and Cuomo, we only managed to add a grand total of 5% of the state electricity coming from, wind and solar. The other problem, unfortunately, is also that it's very hard to actually put together large-scale wind and solar projects in New York State. Basically, it almost always results in local opposition. And the result is it can take 10 years to site these projects. And when the IPCC says we have 12 years left for dramatic worldwide global action, taking 10 to 12 years just to build a, you know, a solar farm is not going to save life on this planet. And that has to change.
Mark, I can understand why people sometimes don't want wind farms. There has been complaints about noise and other things. But why is a solar farm something people wouldn't want? I've seen them. They just seem to quietly sit there and soak up the sun.
They do take up a lot of land. I mean, part of it is somewhat... Well, this is not really for me. This is to build, you know, to provide electricity to New York City.
Oh.
And, you know, some guys coming in for a private profit. And, you know, often, you know, they end up taking, you know, farmland that, you know, people think should be preserved. And one of the things that we have said is that each community should have to develop their own, you know, plans for developing renewable energy and let them cite it. In fact, we would say the Green Education Legal Fund have the state actually pay the upfront money to build these things as an economic development boon to bring in, you know, jobs for the local community. But have the local community determine where they want to build these things rather than having private developers. But we do have to speed up the process, but we need, you know, stronger leadership, and we have to say no to fossil fuels. We have to say no to, like the Williams Pipeline. You know, there were about 700 of us last week that protested against it. And even things like, you know, we need to stop, you know, plastic, which actually has a big impact upon climate change. Obviously, New York City last week, you know, went along and did the second step finally on trying to ban plastic bags and do, you know, fees on paper bags. There is a Beyond Plastic Forum taking place next Monday in New York City, April 29th at Pace University at 7. There's a lot of things people can do. We need to get people really engaged. It was very great to see the Extinction Rebellion out there last week in New York City at City Hall. They're demanding 100% by 2025, and actually for the whole last week they've been shutting down London. The Extinction Rebellion is started in England about, I don't know, 6 months ago, but it now also is in many countries, including the United States.
Yes, we've had them here on the show. I want to get back to something that we were talking about allowing local municipalities to decide where to put them, where to put their solar or otherwise renewable energy plants. Is it possible, or is there anything in the plan to have each municipality's local, say, solar farm only make solar energy for their municipality, and then whatever is left over can go into like the pot for other places? Or because wouldn't that encourage people to know that their municipality is doing something for them and not just them putting in, say, resources to fund or to help New York City maintain itself when you're in Syracuse, New York, and you don't really care that much about New York City?
Well, I mean, that's a good, you know, proposal. And one of the things that's actually, you know, a real difference, say in places like Germany, which is so much further ahead of us on public, on renewable energy, you know, their drive has been really driven by local municipal, you know, public power systems. And so that is much more locally oriented. Plus, the local people see it as a public good as opposed to a private profit. And because it's a, you know, the municipal power system, they feel that they have the ability to go down to whatever their equivalent is of City Hall and, you know, be heard. And, you know, we do think that, you know, we should, this would be a moment for democratic control of our, you know, energy system, and that local people should have the ability to try to, you know, figure out what they want to do. But, you know, they should also have the ability to export energy if they want. For instance, you know, what's called the Tug Hill Plateau, you know, north, I guess, east of Syracuse, is really great for wind. But where's the greatest part for wind in the entire world?
Rockaway.
Off of New York City and Long Island, right.
I used to live out there. It is so windy, like unbelievable.
And, you know, we should be developing that, and that's really a lot of jobs. Like the Jacobson Report, which is a report, you know, was done in the fracking thing, said if we built out renewable energy in New York State, at least temporarily, we create about 5 million new jobs, and on a permanent basis, about 300,000 jobs. You know, people want to get good jobs, you know, the renewable energy industry has the potential to do that. And we want energy conservation. We want our subways to work well. It's actually incredible the per capita carbon footprint of the New York City transit system now for everything, including cars and Uber and stuff, is comparable to L.A.
Oh, no.
That's crazy.
We're speaking with Mark Dunley, a chair of the Green Education and Legal Fund. Among other things, he spent 30 years working for the Hunger Action Network in New York. Mark, if we gave local municipalities control over them getting their own energy and then being able to, as you said, sell off whatever the excess is, wouldn't that be nationalizing our energy or akin to nationalizing our energy grid, something that socialists might enjoy?
and we should be nationalizing the grid as well, the transmission lines. When I talk to the governor's energy czar and ask him, you know, what to defend why New York has such a poor record on developing renewable energy, he points to the problem with, you know, so many different individual companies that are running the transmission lines and trying to get them to coordinate and upgrade. And I'm like, well, why don't you just have NYPA, the New York Power Authority, take over the transmission grid, eliminate the profit margin, so it would be cheaper for, you know, the residential commercial customers. But you could also coordinate a whole lot better. You don't have to go lobby 15 private for-profit entities to do this. I mean, there are certain parts that, you mean, I'm an eco-socialist to begin with, but, you know, there are certain, center core of our economic system that should be, you know, publicly owned. The reality is that geographically, most land in this country is serviced by some form of municipal ownership or rural cooperatives for electricity, not in terms of population, but in terms of geography. L.A., for instance, has a municipal power system. There's actually 57 municipal power systems in New York State, all providing electricity much cheaper than, say, Con Ed or, you know, other, you know, private utility companies. So it's not something that's particularly new, but, you know, Con Ed, as they tell us, they want a 9% rate of return on their so-called investment. Well, that's 9% higher electric rates that people, you know, are paying. Mm. And it, you know, reduces coordination and reduces public support for what's being done. So, yes, we would support, you know, a stronger public ownership of our energies and democratic control. Because NYPA, the New York Power Authority, which is a public, you know, system in New York State, runs most of the state hydroelectric, which accounts for about 20% of the state's electricity, you know, doesn't have any type of public input or control, and that's not helpful.
What are the political obstacles around moving one of these plans forward toward renewable energy, and how can we make sure those obstacles are more transparent so we can pressure our leaders to act?
Well, I will say the IPCC report, 12 years left to save life on the planet, but I also Puerto Rico in particular, where, you know, half the population was without electricity and water for 6 months, has sort of provided new impetus. So I think there is, you know, the governor definitely shifted in the last 6 months, which is good to see. You know, the legislature at the state level is now controlled, you know, both parties by the Democrats. It's not enough just to say we're going to do something. We have to actually hold them accountable for what they do. New York City still has a lot of problems. Obviously, they made some good steps last week, particularly finally at the 10-year started under Bloomberg, you know, requiring large buildings, which account, well, buildings in general account for 75% of New York City's carbon footprint, you know, finally, you know, requiring them to do, you know, energy retrofits. But, you know, that's not going to be done until 2050 and only 80%. I think you need people like the Extinction Rebellion to say, listen, we're actually now talking about the possibility of the extinction of the human species. Now, that's still, you know, not likely, but the fact
that
it's even...
Okay. I'm with them. Well, I think it is likely.
That should really be scaring people to say, listen, you know, this has to be ramped up. And also what we've seen in other countries, even as you've increased the amount of wind and solar being used, carbon emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, have continued to increase. So we have to yes to wind and solar and energy efficiency and conservation, but no to any new, you know, fossil fuels. And that's why the Williams Pipeline is so important symbolically, is for New York State to step up and say, we're not going to continue to build out our fossil fuel infrastructure. Because if we build it, then they're going to want to use it for 30, 40 years to recover, you know, the amount of money they put into building it.
Thank you so much for joining us on the program, Mark. You know, someone did come by my small building. I don't own it, but where I live, to change my light bulbs.
That's good.
Yeah. Is it good? I mean, when someone from the city comes by and says, we want to help you change your light bulbs, I knew about the program. I just wasn't. Are people responding positively to this?
Yeah, and people do, you know, 80% of the public actually believes that climate change is a serious problem and wants something done about it. The problem is why they support it, it's not yet a priority for people. So, you know, we'll rank 19th out of 20 problems that they want the government to deal with. Mm. It has to move up higher. It has to become, you know, the number one priority. And that's one of the things AOC is trying to do is, you know, say in 2020 there should be a referendum that this country is going to commit. You know, we can save life on the planet, but we got to do it now. We wasted the last 30 years, even though, you know, Exxon and the rest of them knew that what was happening. We can't waddle any longer. And so far, our political leadership is not up to the task.
Well, Occupy Wall Street did say another world is possible, and now AOC is out there talking about that other world on a very big stage and what that world actually will look like. And then we have folks like you, Mark, who have been working for years to make sure that not only do we not do some of the horrible things that not paying attention would allow us to do, but that we keep moving the ball forward. We've been speaking with Mark Dunley, co-founder of the Green Party of New York, who spent 30 years working for the Hunger Action Network of New York and is the chair of the Green Education and Legal Fund. Mark, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Giuliani, and donate to WBAI.
Yeah. Donate to WBAI. WBAI 99.5 FM is what you're listening to. This is Waking Up. I'm Juliana Forlano. We'll be back.